I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Good evening.
Jay Cross.
Yes.
And Joe Branton.
Shalom.
Welcome to the knackered / jet lagged edition.
I feel fine.
Well, yeah, because I feel great. I'm like top of the world compared to how I was last week.
Nothing.
Actually, I've been at work today. What have you been doing? Not been at work.
I was actually doing the most work today.
I don't think so.
I was doing a
How much of your day was spent in the car?
Big old work. About 4 hours.
And how much of that time were you driving?
None.
Oh, well, I mean, it sounds like you've just sat on your ass for 4 hours.
I was navigating. I'm the Chewbacca.
Navigating? What, down the M40 and then the M25 and then the M23?
Yeah, it's difficult. Getting out of Nottingham is really, really difficult. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh, I was about to say, what were you doing?
Well, we've done loads of stuff, but we always talk about me last, don't we?
Yeah, that's okay.
Let's start with Matt. Matt, how's it going?
Hello.
You've got some good news.
I went to a gig. That's the more important thing than what you guys said. I actually went to a gig.
Go on then. What gig?
I went to see Baroness at Coco in London.
Oh, did you go to when that? That's cool.
I did. And when I walked in, I went, I've been here before. And then I remembered we went to see They Might Be Giants there.
We did.
Which was probably one of the best gigs I've ever been to.
Yeah, that was great. Except we couldn't really see from any of the angles because we're all quite short. And it was like troubling to actually see the stage. But it was cool.
But Baroness was good because it had one of the best pieces of merch I've ever seen, which I nearly bought. And then I was like, maybe. Can I do it? They actually had fuzz pedals for sale.
What? Really?
Yeah, a company who makes fuzz pedals for the lead guitarist in Baroness was like...
John Dyer Baisley.
Yeah, we've made one for each show of the UK tour.
What?
In like limited colours, and then they're like for sale. They're like £120, and I was like,
oh, that's so worth it. That's Matt Knight. Why didn't you get one?
I should have.
Was it the one from that night or was it the one from the night before?
No, I don't know. No, he's got his own ones, but they'd made one for like
Oh, so he hadn't used it? Oh, that's not cool.
He should have used it
the night before.
But they're a company called Philly Fuzz.
Pardon?
Philly Fuzz.
Okay.
In Philadelphia.
Okay.
I think. And I was like, and then I sent them a message on Instagram. They were like, oh, send us an email and we'll build you one. So might get one of those. Because it sounded awesome at the gig. Because he just now uses like just a Fender Twin and that as his main drive sound. And it sounded amazing.
Did they have a credit card machine there? Because who's taking £120 of cash to a gig?
Geez, come on. If they had a credit card machine,
I would have been way more tempted.
They definitely would have had a credit card machine.
So it made it a bit more difficult.
No way it was cash only.
It's so cheap to take to get a little PayPal credit card thing nowadays.
So I'm living in the past. In the morning, I get my coffee from a coffee shop that doesn't even have a name on the coffee shop, and it's run by this little old hippie guy. And he actually has an app on his phone, so you can pay by credit card.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's super easy. I think we've lost Matty.
No, he's back. Matt's back. So what guitar was he playing, Matt?
I think he disappeared for a while. And then I think I came in conversation, somehow managed to avoid every question you might have asked me.
Well, here's one for you. What guitar was the guy from Baroness playing?
The one guy uses an old Les Paul Custom, like a black Les Paul Custom. I think he's got a more modern Silverburst one. And then John Dyer Baisley plays like an old is it a G&L?
Okay.
Is it a G&L? I can't remember. And then he uses like a Custom Shop First Act as well for some of the baritone stuff.
I love,
but yeah, it
Custom
was
Shop
it was
First Act
really
stuff.
Cool sound.
They only make ukuleles now.
Really?
Well, like the only place you can get First Act stuff now is on like Argos's website or something like
what?
That. What? Yeah, yeah, and they only
Custom
make
Custom Shop.
No, they don't do. It's shut down, the Custom Shop. There's no such thing as First Act Custom
really?
Shop.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's all. It's really. The
is sad this definitely
demise.
True?
Yeah, this is 100% true. You can Google this.
Okay.
But yeah, it's the sad demise of First Act, who used to make some amazing Custom Shops. I really liked the hollow bodied three humbucking black sort of 335 style guitar that they made for the Yeah Yeah Yeahs guitarist. That was great. And they've always done some brilliant stuff. But yeah, now it's just like. Ukuleles, SpongeBob SquarePants themed and stuff like that.
I think were they the company that made the 9-string that had the top 3 strings doubled up?
I think that might be right. That rings sort of true. Yeah, I think probably, but I'm not sure.
So, First Act definitely don't make the SpongeBob ukulele.
Look,
by the way,
it's.
Are you thinking of First Line?
No, I'm not. No, 100% First Act, and it's not necessarily SpongeBob. I just meant it as an example. Like they do, they do like you know My Little Pony guitars and things like that. Like just
well, Pony
just crap stuff
about
for kids now.
The thing about the SpongeBob though, just real quick, I think at one point I remember reading it on like MI Pro or something that SpongeBob line of instruments in like 2013 was like the biggest selling line of instruments in Europe.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Like all that licensed stuff does really, really well, no matter what the quality is.
About 2 years ago, I went into is it Bonner's in where's that Eastbourne?
That is a guitar shop. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Bonner's guitars in Eastbourne, and they actually had a wall dedicated
of SpongeBob.
Yeah,
so
why not? Like Matt was saying, it was massively.
Yeah,
popular.
Obviously that's why. I mean, at the time, I was like, well, this shop's going to shut down.
But yeah. Now, you know, now, yes, if they were the biggest selling, then maybe that's slightly more intelligent than I gave them credit for.
But you're right, Joe. All they do is kid stuff, including Band in a Bucket.
Thank you.
What?
this is amazing.
Yeah.
It's not amazing.
It's really sad. First Act were a really brilliant company with a great ethic. It's a real shame.
Well,
but
you know, First Act's Band in a Bucket includes a kazoo playing instruction book, yep. Harmonica, spoons, rhythm egg... No, sorry, rhythm fish, egg shakers and tambourine.
Wow, I want a rhythm egg now you said it. I like the kazoo manual. Like, what do you need?
I like just a spoon. And you can see the hand of the person who took the photo in.
Yes, amazing.
They also do some stuff for Nickelodeon.
Yeah, that was it.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles ukulele.
That's
wow,
what I was
that's so weird.
Isn't it? Such a sad shame. We should, you know, we are going to at some point start this brand of the week.
Yes.
I think First Act, like the heritage of First Act is a really interesting story, how they came about and how they went from being kind of like an Argosy Sears company to introducing the Custom Shop and then making guitars for loads of like top end guitarists and stuff and becoming quite big in like the hardcore scene to then sort of just fading out and returning to this. Obviously this is not First Act anymore. The name has just been sold to someone making some crap.
That's so weird. Such a weird story.
It's a real shame.
Tell you what isn't crap, Matt Knight, you've got a new guitar.
Yeah, really really odd. Like not totally planned. I think for a while I was like, oh, if you know, as always, it's like if something cool comes up, you know, I consider it. And then basically a guitar came in where I work on Saturday, which is effectively exactly the same specs as the Esquire used to have, minus the top binding and the pickups. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. And then the guy was like, yeah, it's in candy apple red. And I opened the case and it was in red sparkle. And I was like, this guitar is destined.
Yes.
To,
yes. So what's
to fall to me?
Give us a rundown on the spec.
So it's 58. So it's top loading as well, which is I think is much better rather than string through body. Soft V neck profile.
Why do you think that's much better?
Yeah, I think it is.
No, but why? I've never heard that way round be preferable.
No, I think it sustains better. I know people say through body, but I prefer the top loading one. I just think it's much better.
Fair enough. Do you prefer the strings being slacker then?
Eh, it doesn't just, as long as I've set it up all right and it plays all right, it doesn't really. But it's one of those things I'm like, it probably wouldn't bother me either way, but I'm just like, oh, it's like that, so that's great, and that'll do. But yeah, that's not like I'd go out to a guitar shop and be like, oh yeah, I love this guitar, but it's only string through and I've got to play this one. You know, it's just one of those things that if the guitar's all right and that's one of the minor differences, then, you know, fine by me.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, 57 soft V neck profile, no caster neck pickup, broadcaster bridge pickup. And the best pickup configuration, and 9.5-inch radius. Just basically, it's basically a custom shop Baja and Red Sparkle.
Have you still got a Baja?
Yeah, yeah. I'd never sell that.
So what? There's no way you had the money to do this outright. What did you sell?
They're not buying the house anymore.
Yeah, the house is the house deal's gone, and you got a telly, so it's fine.
Yeah, well, basically, there was a guy at work who was like, oh, I really want the 60s telly, and he'd never spent, like, more than, like, 800 quid on a guitar, and I was like, oh, well, I've got this custom shop, and I need to sell that, really, to buy this, and he was like, oh, bring it in, and he played it, and was like, this is exactly the guitar that I want, and I was like, well, you know, I'll do you a good price on it, and so he bought that for me, and I bought that, so amazing. Everything worked out, happy days.
That is perfect, definitely.
Yeah, I know. It was like meant to be. And I had this weekend off completely. I didn't have anything to worry about. So I played guitar for about 12 hours straight on Sunday. It was great.
Awesome.
What's the deal in terms of the relicking and stuff?
It's like a light relic, but it is like fairly heavy relicked. And I've taken the scratch plate off because it looks
It's a light relic, but it's fairly heavily relicked.
It's light on the top, but it's quite a kind of...
The neck looks pretty heavily relicked.
The neck is really relicked, and a couple of the edges are really relicked, but the rest of the body is, like, hardly any marks at all.
How old is it?
But in an odd... 2008.
Right, okay.
Cool.
So it's and I also took the scratch plate off, because it looks really cool without the scratch plate on.
I think you're wrong there. What would come with it? A mint scratch plate?
A white one. Did not look good.
Yeah, no.
Oh, no, I'm into that. On a Red Sparkle, a nice, crisp, white scratch plate is all right.
No,
particularly a one-ply. I'm into that in a big way.
You're such a fool.
Red Sparkle is one of those odd colours. It's like, what colour scratch plate could you put with it that would really work?
I would have thought mint or parchment.
Mirror.
Yes, cracked mirror. It was like that. There was that Matt Bellamy court, wasn't it, in Cracked Mirror, but it had lasers underneath, so like laser beams came through the cracks on the front.
Yes.
Sounds awful.
Because when you're playing Wembley Stadium and you're not actually doing anything, you know, you need to still look good.
The only mirror scratch plate that I ever bought was one for my P-Bass, and as soon as I put it on, at least three of the screw holes cracked as soon as I tightened the screws up on it. It was like, this is pointless. This is just rubbish.
It looked good, though.
It did look good until you look closely, and then it looked really rubbish. But from the stage, it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, that's not true.
Yeah, it was cool.
I can assure you, it did.
I also had a giant made out of silver, like sparkly, like weird gaffer. Had like a giant M on the front of the bass as well. Yes.
I thought you said a giant hen.
Yeah, just a giant hen.
Why would you have a giant chicken?
Yeah, giant cock, just right on there. Anyway, Jay Cross.
Hello.
Have you done any guitar stuff this week? let's do a little inside baseball. Before we start the podcast, you said, do not throw to me and ask me if I've done any guitar stuff, because I haven't done any guitar stuff. What's the closest thing you've done to guitar stuff this week?
I'm putting on a show on Friday.
Yes.
Oh, God, yeah, you're playing.
What's the deets?
What else have I done? I had a great conversation about my Space Echo. That was good.
Okay, who with?
Just with a mate of mine.
Okay, what was the conversation?
He threw up a...
he threw up. He just threw up.
He threw up a picture on Facebook of the random tone generator and was like, oh, this is cool, isn't it? And I was like, yes, you should get one, because I tried it through my Space Echo and it sounded amazing.
Have you still got a random tone generator?
No, okay. I just borrowed it.
Okay.
Have I done anything guitar related? Not really. I've been really busy. It's been a busy week.
Okay.
I had to go back and visit my mum because it was Mother's Day. I hope she's not listening, because that makes it sound...
As if she's going to be listening. Let's hope she isn't listening. Not just for this instance, but just the general vibe.
I mean, we're interesting.
Yeah,
you know, it's the sort of thing people can put debatable on their daily commute.
Debatable, definitely. It's not exactly Radio 4. Anyway,
no.
So you've done nothing guitar related?
I think so. I played a bit of your guitar earlier today.
You did, yeah. Sounded great. My guitar's really good.
I don't know. I haven't this week. I've had a bit of a week off. I didn't have a band practice. Yeah. Listen to a lot of guitar music, though.
I tell you what's
great that I listened to this week that I'm really into is, and I know that you really don't like them, is this band Sheer Mag from Philadelphia. They sound like Thin Lizzy, but today. They sound like today, but like with... like
they definitely don't sound like that.
With like 70s recording techniques. But the guitar player plays like a Schecter or something.
Nice.
There's one guitar player who plays like a 70s Fender, and the other plays a Schecter or something. But they're great. They put out a new record this week, and it is absolutely banging. It's so good. And the first two were brilliant. And they weren't as good as I wanted them to be when I saw them a couple of months ago. So I was a bit disappointed. They're playing another show in London in a couple of months, and I wasn't sure about going to see him, but this new record is well good, so I think I'm going to go.
Okay.
But honestly, they sound like... some of the guitar work sounds like Thin Lizzy, but they're a punk band from Philadelphia in 2016.
So I want... if you're listening to this podcast, go and check out Sheer Mag and put up a review of their most recent record in the Facebook group to prove that Jay is full of nonsense. Because
I'm telling you,
I think they sound like a bad punk band.
They don't. They are great. Great guitar work. They're such a good band. Such a good band.
That's the weekly challenge for the Facebook group this week. The reviews of the Sheer Mag album.
Sheermag.bandcamp.com, I think.
Joe Branton.
Yes.
You were not here last week.
No, I wasn't. How was the podcast?
Hey, it was all right. What did we do last week?
We spent quite a lot of it talking about how you weren't here.
Oh, that was great. It was so good. Relaxing.
Like it went like without any hitches.
Do you know what? Last week,
no cuts.
It's probably my favourite podcast we've ever done. It was great.
Sure.
Jay read out the Patreon people, and their names actually got read out correctly.
Oh, that's nice. That's not going to happen today.
Didn't accidentally call someone a knob.
Call him a knob. Did I call him a knob?
No.
I think you
skewed someone's name.
Sorry, Chris.
So, Joe Branton, where have you been? Why were you off last week?
I went to Southern California to see my girlfriend who was working out there, and we stayed with a couple of friends over there, and they live in Riverside, which is just outside of LA and the closest town to Corona.
Okay.
Corona, that is
Corona,
right.
Yes.
Corona, California. Yeah.
Corona, California, which is where the Fender factory is. So I went to the Fender factory. I was able to sort out with the Fender guys before I left, getting me on one of the tours over at the Fender factory. And so I went over and checked it out, and it was pretty cool.
So they've just installed, they just opened the visitor centre, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
What was that experience like before we dive into the factory stuff?
Well, the visitor centre is essentially maybe three or four rooms in a building opposite the factory.
Okay.
And it's just, it's full of some great stuff. I took loads of photos, so I'll upload loads of things. I'm going to write some stuff on it as well, but I'll upload loads of photos to the group. And it's got some really great things, including like Leo Fender's first attempt at an electric guitar. It's kind of an Esquire, but with a 3x3 headstock.
The Snakehead Tele prototype.
Yeah, that's right. So they've got like, you know, one of those in there, and some really crazy looking custom shops and interesting examples of guitars throughout the years. There were like a really, really awesome example of a custom shop 51 P bass, which I was really, really into, and sort of as well all their amps. They've got every amp they ever made sort of out on a podium and things like that.
Every amp.
Well, it's an awful lot of amplifiers, including some of their crap ones. So you know, it was. So I assumed
was there a cyber twin there?
I didn't actually see a cyber twin.
But I've been getting a lot of heat because we put the cyber twin in our top five guitar fails on YouTube.
And bizarrely enough, I actually spoke to a customer who was like, "Oh yeah, I need to upgrade. I'm thinking about getting getting this Mustang 3 because I currently use a Cybertwin. And I was like, oh, we were just talking about that. I love it. Best thing I've ever owned. I was like,
there's so many people on the comments of that YouTube video like, don't be attacking the Cybertwin. Oh, don't be saying that.
But of all things, like, of all amps that are available today, the Mustang 3 is definitely not, like, irrespective of how bad the Cybertwin was, the Mustang 3 is not an upgrade of a Cybertwin.
Well, I don't know. You say that.
I think in terms of modelling, it probably
is. Weren't around when the Cybertwin was out. Yeah, it was pretty rough around the edges. But yeah, in the comments, people were just like going after me because dared to say that the Cybertwin wasn't the greatest amp of all time.
Wow, and being one of those people. Well, imagine living a life where you're a guitarist and think the Cybertwin is a viable option to amplify your guitar.
Well, the other thing was, in a slightly kind of snidey remark at one of the end of the at the end of one of the bits, I think when we were talking about the Mode 4, I kind of said that the Hughes and Kettner Warp 7 was the worst new metal amp. And loads of people have gone after me for that as well. Like, what are you saying about the Warp 7? No, great amp. Still got it. No, still got it.
Do you know what? That is why so many great records and amazing famous musicians play Cybertwins and Mode 7, whatever the...
What about the guy from Crazy Town? He was using the Warp 7.
God, it's just such a skew. Oh, well, I've spent no money on this rubbish amp, so it must be good. What a ridiculous... Oh, sorry, it really, really ticks me off that people think the Cybertwin is any good.
I think we should do a segment every week where it's called What Grinds My Gears, where Joe just goes off on one.
That'd be good.
So 4-4.
I hate 4-4.
4-4 is the best.
I think the thing is that, as you said in the video, though, it's like that stuff is still good stuff. It's just that it just really, like, failed terms of, like...
Yeah, and to be honest, it's,
in the same sense we were talking about the Fender Elite series, that like there is no, and a lot of people fussed about that, but there is no arguing that the simple fact is Fender had to be sold after the Elite series came out because it crushed them as a company.
This is the original Elite series, American Elite.
I mean, all I'm saying is all of this happened before and all of this will happen again.
No, I think they'll escape it this time. Fender is slightly better shape than it was, I guess, in the 80s. And they're also much better guitars than the original Elites.
Well, they're just rebranded Deluxes.
Yeah. So anyway, had nearly every amp they've ever made.
So yeah, that's right. And they've got all their guitars up on the wall. They have this main room that's just got all the guitars and a nice little bit of information on them on the side. It's a really interesting big room to be in. I mean, you know, it was absolutely nothing that I didn't already know, I hadn't already seen. But it was really cool just to have it all in one place. And then they had a couple of separate rooms. They had one area where they have a chap who's involved in custom shop design, who's actually working and coming up with ideas, and you can go in and chat with him and see all the stuff that's in there. I thought it was quite... He has a few example bodies and necks and things that he can mess around with. I thought it was quite amusing to see that there are a number of those... what were they called? Sandblasted...
They
were the worst things.
No, I quite like
super
those.
Cool. Super cool.
Fine. Anyway, they had lots of them, which means they evidently didn't do well. But and they also had like a demo room in there where they had loads and loads of stuff and some interesting things, because obviously it was kind of a demo room, and so I completely understand that they'd probably put a few things in there that were maybe trial runs and stuff like that.
So while you were in there.
Yes, exactly. So
didn't quite make it the full production,
clearly. But they had things like stuff that the layman would assume was a production line, but had like subtle things that were a little bit different. So they had things like a 5-string dimension bass that had like a heavy relict neck on it.
What?
It was mental. Like really bizarre little sort of. It was obviously a bit of a bitzer.
Okay.
But it was quite cool.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, that was great. And loads of amps in there for you to plug into. I was there with a friend who was also a bass player. We got maybe sort of 5-10 minutes in that room before some chode came in and plugged in a Strat and started playing blues standards. But, you know, it was really good up until that point.
What were you doing? Playing a bass, like some sort of math on bass?
I slapped
like,
a bass.
What is this?
Pretty much, yeah. But then, anyway, that's kind of the visitor's centre. So they've got all that sort of stuff set up. There's also, you can buy all that those crappy Trilbys that Fender sell and all their
they've got the lifestyle products,
yeah all that stuff. But you can also buy like pickups and soft cases and hard cases and things like that.
What about the cool. Is that where you do the design and buy your own American guitar in that bit?
I don't know, actually.
Where you can go and, like you can do online, where you go, all right, I want a Daphne blue body with a rosewood neck and I want these frets or that thing.
I imagine
that
you can do, because they had like a wall in there that had like loads of charts on it on their individual parts. They didn't have any examples of them there. But yeah, that was quite cool. I thought that was just a great, it was basically like, if anyone's ever bought like a Fender encyclopedia or things like that, it was kind of like an interactive one of those, which is really good, I think, for people to get a grasp of Fender and what it was. And they had these long glass walls of all these custom shop guitars that famous players have had, which was really great, really interesting.
I imagine that building's great for someone, say, like my dad or something, who's like interested in music but like isn't super nerdy about guitars, and if you know, if he was in the area and it was something that he went on, it would be like a really good introduction to like the history of Fender, but without going into like, in this year we got bought out by CBS and then this happened and then the factory workers bought it and that sort of like not too much detail.
That's exactly what it was, and to be honest, it was full of guys with their family and stuff who were wandering around, and it was a bit more family friendly, I think, than the rest of it, than the tour was, because the tour was a bit more sort of, you know, looking at the individual bits and bobs. But yeah, anyway, after we sort of had checked out the visitors centre, there's a tour which I think it's like $10 or $20 to do the tour. I got mine sorted out through Fender.
Oh, well, but, there we go.
But you know, it's not expensive to go on the tour. They do sort of like groups of 10 people or so, and you have a tour guide who basically takes you through the whole factory, so shows you every bit of the process from where you've got people pressing the metal work, so the bridges, the jack sockets and things like that, through to the wood shop where they're cutting the bodies, and it shows the machines that they have, just two machines for each of the main body shapes.
Really?
Yeah.
So all the strats are just done on two machines.
Two machines.
All the telly's done on two machines.
Yeah. Which is bonkers. They put out 360 guitars a day.
Okay.
That's in total. That's strats, tellies, jags, jazz masters,
from the custom
P-basses.
Shop?
No. This is Corona. Country. This is Corona. Right. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that is pretty bonkers, because six years ago, when I went to Gibson, they said that they were doing 600 a day.
Yeah.
And when I went to the Martin factory, they said that they were doing about 600 a day.
Wow.
You would think that more than 360 Fender guitars get sold every day.
I was really surprised.
Especially considering, you know, they're modular guitars. They're relatively easy to build in comparison to, say, a Martin or a... I think it was 600 Martin guitars out of the Navajo factory, so out of the Mexican factory.
Right, okay.
Or maybe it was. No, maybe it was out of there.
I don't know, though. But Gibson, their Nashville, their standard plant does 600 to 700
guitars
a day. And actually, when you think about that, that is a lot.
That is a lot of guitars.
For one factory to have boxed and ready to go in one day.
But let's not forget that Fender have a Mexican factory, which I'm sure is turning over double.
I was just about to say, that's all the Gibson guitars, basically, because Gibson don't make anything elsewhere.
The reason
elsewhere,
that Fender produce so few is because whilst the bodies are cut to a mathematical machine to make sure that they're all exactly the same, they are still hand sanded.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And these guys like had very little in the way of robotic assistance when we were sort of in that bit to watch them actually sort of sanding down the bodies, and then the finishing is still very much a hands on thing. They're still really it's a sort of one guitar at a time, one fella spraying, sanding down, spraying again to get the gloss finish.
So walk us through the process then, which is what I assume they did in the factory. So talk us through how a guitar comes to being.
Okay. The first thing, they very much had like a separate area which was metal. The metalwork side of things.
What, like super strats and stuff?
Very good. Very good. That's where they met the Jackson and Charvel models, right?
Yeah.
There they had... that was kind of where they were making all the hardware. And they also explained that, you know, really that's what kind of defines the American factory from the Mexican factory is that they don't outsource any of these parts. So they have, there were maybe five people on quite large machines that were pressing all of the individual parts, all of the bridges for tellies and for strats and for P basses and jazz basses, all independently, individual items being done. And they have like a quota, a list quota that they have to work to. And they were showing me the presses and that they use for the guitars, and they are 50-year-old presses that they're using for those, which is bonkers, isn't it, for all the American vintage stuff, which is great. It really kind of reassuring about the American vintage range, especially, which I think you, Mark, have given some flack to in the past. But I just thought that was very, very authentic, that, you know, these aren't just, you realise that these aren't just like cheap, rough reproductions of
they're actually using the same machines.
Yeah, exactly so, which was really cool. And yeah, then through from there, we went into the wood shop, which first of all showed where the necks were made, and they just have like stacks of the plain pieces of maple that they then cut to neck sizes, which was quite cool because they had loads of like, they had sort of big walls of various necks and things that were all just hanging up in some form of being finished, having frets added, things like that. One of the cool things that the guide actually did show us was he took a strap body that had literally just been cut, and then he took a neck that was 15 years old and showed that it fits perfectly.
Really?
Into
that's cool. That's cool. So, for those listening to the podcast, Joe is flicking through his holiday snaps.
Yeah.
As a reminder. But yeah, this picture is awesome. He's literally just like slotting what's obviously an old neck into a body that looks like it's just come off the production line.
Yeah, and it literally did. He took it straight off of the production line and there and slotted it and showed that it was perfect. Just to show how, like, because he was saying, you know, that there is maybe a little bit of flack that comes to Fender's top end stuff for using machines to cut their bodies, but actually just for the fact is Fender are trying to make modular guitars, and these are perfectly modular,
and they've always said that, you know, that's always been the point.
Yeah, exactly. So that was really cool. They showed us sort of where all the bodies get cut and then sort of through to the people that actually sand the bodies down afterwards to get rid of any rough edges. And that literally was benches of a couple of guys with ear protection and sanders.
And white lab coats, by the looks of things.
Yeah, everyone was wearing white lab coats, which was a little bit weird. And then they show the bodies after that. They have they actually use the neck drill holes to drill in these handles into the body so that they can then hold the guitar by a handle in order to spray it without, you know, having your hands on the guitar, which was pretty cool. And they spray them, then immediately sand them when they've dried, and then spray them again with the gloss coat. And
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas.
absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
The whole roof of the warehouse, for like as far as I could see, was hanging guitars that were drying, a bit like
an episode of Dexter.
Well, because I think if I remember rightly, did I not? I mean, you were there, so correct me, but don't they like put it on the production line and it goes round the factory dries in the ceiling?
Yeah,
and then
that's
by the
right.
time it comes down, it's completely dry and then ready to go.
Exactly, yeah. And they showed us sort of that working and that moving round, which is just, I thought, incredibly efficient kind of use of space. And
do they give you any indication of how long they're up on there drying?
They didn't know. Oh, he showed me the nitros, which don't move round. They just leave them there hanging because they take a week.
Okay.
Wow.
And he was saying that they maybe do, like, for the nitros, which is the American vintage range, the custom shop are dealt with slightly separately. They're very much painted in their own one-off individuals.
Yeah.
But the American vintages, they're maybe doing 15 a week because nitros take so long. Think about how prolific the American vintage series is.
Yeah.
And that they do an American vintage Mustang, Jaguar, Jazzmaster.
Not a Mustang.
Jaguar.
I don't know. No. I've never done an American vintage Mustang. Oh, okay. But Jaguar and Jazzmaster.
Jaguar, Jazzmaster, Strat,
and a few
Telly,
Strats and Tellys. A yeah.
couple of P basses, a couple of jazz basses. And like, just what a tiny amount to be putting out. But
that's
a lot of people doing running exercises. You know, like stretching your hamstrings.
What?
Yeah. We walked around the corner and literally there were these three women who were there, the employees they had painting the guitars, were doing like stretches. And
is that because they're on their feet all the day?
And the guy was explaining that Fender have very strict rules around like making sure that you don't get repetitive strain injuries.
So you have to go and do your
10 minutes out of every 50, you have to do these stretches.
Really?
Yeah, which
that's really cool.
It was really cool, yeah. It was like, I thought it was a joke at first because it looked like these ladies were getting ready to run off, but they were actually
we've had enough.
Yeah, exactly. But it was really cool when they took us around into the custom shop area and showed us some sort of examples of like finished guitars, and took us into the actual custom shop area where there's the sort of 10-12 guys. Unfortunately, there was only team built stuff being done that day, but we got to see some really lovely, especially very nice aged I would say Pelham, Lake Placid Blue.
Yep.
Strats and things, but they were really, really cool, really interesting sort of bit of the factory, and a few things that we saw that weren't yet sort of released. There was some, just because I could see it on the runs, and I don't actually, I'm not 100% sure if this is released, but a complete range of, I think it was Aztec Gold matching headstock. Jazzmasters, Strats, and jazz basses.
Isn't there an American vintage in gold now?
There is,
Matt.
There is not matching headstock, a standard.
Yeah, these were matching headstock.
Right. Okay, so it could be FSRs, like factory special run.
Could well be. Yeah, but yeah, there was some super cool stuff there, and some really like random things like tangerine jazz basses.
Yeah, tangerine. What a colour.
Yeah,
what a colour.
It was pretty rad, but yeah, that's that was sort of about it. So it took us it just basically took us round the whole factory and showed us the complete process, and finished with the custom shop, which was just really amazing to be in that one sort of little booth area. And you realize it's small, like it's just an office. Like there are two desks in there for them to make the guitars on.
If you follow Dr. Wilson on Instagram, that's what's the guy? Is it Dale Wilson? Sorry, yeah, is the one of the master builders there, and like his Instagram kind of gives you an overview of what he's doing every day, like the guitars that he's building every day. And his little office bit, his little area looks super small, but like the guitars that are coming out of there are so cool. He definitely builds, I think, my favourite stuff out of the custom shop.
Yeah, he builds some cool stuff.
Yeah,
a cool job though. Like, if you love building guitars, imagine that, just being like, obviously you've got like a certain customers spec guitars built, but when they come around to like doing the NAMM stuff, and they're like, just do what you want, just build something crazy, and they're like, okay. Imagine how cool that would be.
In the entranceway to the factory itself, they have a little plaque with the name of every single master builder and an example of his work. So they had like Yuri Shishkov there, and Greg Fessler, and yeah, that Cruz fella who I always call Ted Cruz accidentally.
Ted Cruz is the politician.
Yeah, I know.
He's the Republican,
the one who eats
candidate.
Snot.
Who eats snot?
Did you not see this?
Oh god, this is going to be an internet thing, isn't it?
No,
let's not do this now.
Genuinely ate his own snot accidentally.
Okay. This sounds horrendous. Yeah, so, did you do any other guitar stuff while you were over there?
Well, I was staying with my friend JD, who is a podcast listener, and he's also an Eden endorsee.
Okay,
and a bass player who has loads of really cool stuff. I sent you guys a couple of pictures of some of the weirdest stuff that he had in his little studio at his house.
Good collection of stuff.
Yeah, so there was like things like he had one of the old Big Muffs, the black Big Muffs with the
the Russian one.
Yeah, the Russian ones, but it was with a JHS
mod
on it. Yeah. Okay. Which is pretty good.
What did the mod do?
Yeah, they did some mod.
I think it was just a blend.
Okay.
The mod, which wasn't all that interesting. But then, just some really cool stuff, including an ARC ECC. Anyone know about these?
It's ART. That's not ARC.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's ART.
Oh, right, sorry. ART ECC.
Okay, what is it?
It is one of the first ever multi-effects pedals.
Right.
So this thing was crazy thin, like really thin for a multi-effects pedal. Everything is done through like a tiny little LCD screen and sort of, you know, scrolling up and down to pick effects.
I like that when on old multi-effects, when you've just got an LCD that gives you like a number, and then they have to write on the front of the pedal, like what effect matches that number.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm showing everyone a picture right now, but I'll upload it onto the group. Half of the top control of the board is a massive grid trying to explain what every number represents. But the most interesting, I thought, were the foot switch buttons, which is something that loads of famous players go for on their custom boards, a style of foot switch that exists on loads of famous players' custom-built boards, but it's never really made it onto standard foot pedals. And that's a kind of very large, round, rubber foot switch that has one of the standard sort of MXR electro-harmonic style
underneath.
Yeah, it's kind of like protection for those big sort of metal buttons.
So you can play it barefoot?
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
Sorry, did I ruin that for
you? No, but it's just weird, isn't it? It looks cool, like I see it on Fripp's pedals that he gets made by
Pete Cornish
and you know, and a few others. But it's just, it looks great, and JD was explaining that it was something that pretty much only came out in the States and is now way more expensive than they were when he picked one up for, you know, sort of $100 or whatever.
It looks bizarre. It looks completely super like 80s, late 80s.
Yeah.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to be divisive there.
I genuinely
think that that's what it's for.
I
actually saw on one of those Facebook groups this week, someone had modded their ESA, I think it might be in the ESA users group. I don't know. It was one of those groups where someone had modded their pedals so that they had larger buttons. So that, for that very reason, so that you could use them barefoot, because like, you know, you try and tread on one of those little switches when you're not wearing shoes, and it's just a bit, even thinking about it, sort of, oh god, oh, don't like it, don't like doing it. And I think it, you know, if you're, you know, if you're in a rehearsal room a lot, or just playing at home, yeah. I think it's one of those things where it makes me feel really uncomfortable. You've got to wear slippers, and that's not very rock and roll, is it?
You know, Matt, you probably know actually. What's the company that makes those kind of pedal button enlargers?
I have no idea. I've seen them everywhere, and I think people have just been like creating some weird DIY stuff from like B&Q or something. I don't know if there's actually like a company. I'll look into it though. There's been some weird stuff like that on Kickstarter as well. Like people are like, oh, here's this Kickstarter I've got for this foot pedal for your guitar pedals. And it's like, need 20 grand.
It's like, that's never going to happen.
No. Joe, you've just brought up a picture of something else that...
The best thing that he had on all his stuff was the an original harmonic percolator.
It's the pedal we always rave about.
Yeah, really great. I just think the idea of having sort of fader style controls rather than rotary knobs, I've always just found them loads more usable, and it is just a wicked sounding pedal. Harmonic percolators, just get one. I mean, if you can't find one of the old ones, I know Third Eye Pedals do a copycat. I think there are quite a few companies now that do harmonic percolators. But yeah, interestingly enough, because JD was an Eden endorser, he obviously had loads of Eden gear, including loads of Eden pedals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, apparently so. They do like a complete range, including things like the California Auto Wah.
Okay, how did that sound?
I mean, it sounded like an Auto Wah, but actually really good. The pedals were all really well built. It kind of like checking out and messing around with Eden stuff over the weekend gave me a sort of a new respect for a brand that I really thought had fallen by the wayside.
But. So Eden are owned by Marshall, right?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
Were they sort of I thought they were just sort of swallowed up by Marshall, but were they just bought by Marshall and allowed to sort of continue being their own thing?
That seems to be the case in the States. Yeah, very much right. So. They're their own thing. Actually, next weekend is the London bass show, and I know JD's coming over from California because Eden endorsee, they're having him over to
be
on the stand and everything. But nice. Yeah, so they seem to be very much still quite an independent little company. They're just very much US based now.
There's not a huge amount of stuff available here, is there?
Not really. I mean, the things that are very successful are their EC series. They did like a range of combos and an EC300 head, which were they were all just Class D amps and combos for bass, but they were incredibly cheap, and you were kind of getting there is a quality assurance with Eden that's very, very high. So they were extremely budget pieces of equipment, where looks was, as I think is always the case with Eden gear, looks was the last thing they were considering.
Yeah.
And but fortunately sound was one of the first. So whilst they're covered in carpet and genuinely look like the sort of amp you would buy in 1982, fortunately they have a price point that reflects an amp you would buy in 1982, but actually sounds quite good.
Yeah. Cool. Good stuff. Well, time to reassess Eden.
Yeah.
Try some out.
Exactly.
So the reason that I was in Nottingham, as Jay alluded to earlier.
So I had to think about it. It's definitely not the M40. I think it's the M1.
It was the M1 that
we were on. There we go.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry, people who live on the M40.
M4. No, it was M1, and drove up there yesterday because I was hosting a session at a place called Confetti, which is a kind of like a technical college, like an ICT college, and they were having a thing this week called Industry Week, where they get people from creative industries to come in and chat stuff to their students.
So why were you there?
Yeah, exactly. Why was I there? Well, actually, I was there as a kind of go-between, basically. They obviously heard my amazing presenting skills on this podcast and wanted me to host a session called Guitar Heroes, which is weird because guitar nerds, random heroes, guitar heroes. it was a kind of Q&A session with the students there with three guitar players, Mikey Demas from Skindred, a chap called Bernie Tomei, who was the guitar player with Ozzy Osbourne for a while, but also was in the band Gillen with Ian Gillen from Deep Purple, and a guy called John Fairhurst, who is a kind of, I guess, kind of folky blues kind of guy. And yeah, I learnt loads about guitar stuff today. I was like hosting the session, and the students kind of submitted questions that we could ask them. And chatting to those guys over the course of an hour and a half, we just talked about loads of guitar stuff. Really, really different setups. Like, Bernie was real classic kind of rock guy. He was using a Strat, just three single coil Strat, into a Marshall Vintage Modern and a Marshall 412. And, like, through the course of the session, we were kind of like, why'd you choose the bits of gear that you chose? And, you know, how's it changed over the years? And he basically went, I love Jimi Hendrix. I loved Jimi Hendrix when I was like 16. and I've never ever played anything other than a Strat and a Marshall.
Wow.
Yeah. And well, actually, that's a lie. He said that he once owned a Les Paul and he used it for one gig and it sounded shit. So he was like, no, I'll just go back to the Strat. And he was like such a cool old school guy, like loads of really cool rock and roll stories. Like, you should check him out, Bernie Tomei. And yeah, his setup was just a Strat. Like, I think it had a neck replacement. It was like clearly an old body, but it had like just a parts caster kind of neck. Into a Russian Big Muff, which is weird, the second time we've talked about it tonight. Into a noise suppressor, because he was like, oh yeah, I love the Russian Big Muff, awfully noisy. He had a NS2, and then just into, yeah, Vintage Modern, which is a Marshall head that I'd kind of forgotten about, how good those Vintage Modern heads were.
It's a shame they don't make those, because they were basically single channel heads with like two different voices, weren't they?
Not really. They kind of worked like a channel patched JTM or a Blues Breaker, in that they had that kind of high gain and low gain going into the front end, and then a kind of like a channel volume essentially. So you could kind of, if you want a drive sound that was like kind of toppy, you'd crank the high gain and then just bring up the low gain, or if you wanted something chunky, you'd bring up the low gain and then leave the high gain down. And by high gain and low gain, I don't mean like amounts of gain. It's like the two channels essentially within the amp that are patched, and you can kind of blend them together.
Are they patched as standard?
There's only one input.
Oh, right.
Looks like a DSL-50.
Yeah.
But then you've got the amount of each kind of voicing,
presumably a vintage voicing and a modern voicing.
Not really. No, you had like almost like a bass gain and a treble gain.
Right. Okay.
And then just a three-band EQ, like really simple. And I honestly think we talk, you know, about the DSL-50 being kind of like the last great Marshall, but these, I think, are kind of up there. Like the way he was using it today sounded really good. And yeah, from that weird period of Marshall when they were releasing like the Hayes series and the MAs
and the Mode 4.
It's like way later than that. It was only, I guess, in the last
2007.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Wow.
When they were first announced. But they were like KT66 driven. So they were like proper vintage Marshalls. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know, because I'm sure they had like Slash endorsing it for a while. They had loads of people like endorsing it.
Yeah.
And then they just like kind of cut it off. And I think it was at that point where the Tiny Terror had kind of obviously was then, you know, had just come out, because obviously Tiny Terror is 10 years old this year. And I think people were going, oh, maybe 100 watts, 50 watts is a bit too loud. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where they've gone, well, if we could really get this down to like 20 watts or, you know, 30 watts, we'd be laughing. But they only made 50 and 100 and combos. And I think ultimately people stopped wanting amps that sort of size.
I think it was, for me, I was really surprised by the tone, because I'd kind of forgotten how good they were, and he was just getting a great sound out of it today. And they came out at the same time, I think, as JVM and the Hayes and the MA series. It was like all around a similar time, and they just kind of got lost a little bit. But actually, they were kind of a really, really good amp. And for someone who wanted kind of classic Marshall sounds, and the way he described it today, he basically said, like, I've got a couple of late 60s JTMs, I can't take them out anymore because they're obviously really fragile, and this is the closest thing Marshall have made, because it is like patching the channels, having that high and low gain settings, or high and low gain blend type thing. That kind of really blew me away. So one of the other guys was John Fairhurst, who is kind of blues and kind of finger style, played very much in the style of like Sun House,
so like a Delta.
What he was playing today. He actually plays a variety of things, but he had like a really nice old National resonator, which sounded beautiful. Playing through a valve preamp into just a little acoustic amp, little Fender Acoustasonic, and straight out to the PA. And again, like really blown away by his tone. Really, really nice. That, I mean, it's an old National, so you kind of know that it's going to sound pretty good. And then obviously Mikey Demas from Skindred, who is an Orange endorsee, he took a couple of Jim Root Tiny Terrors with him, and was using those, and also was doing some stuff with Axe Effects as well for effects and things like that.
What guitar was he using?
he was using his guitar.
His weird Strat, the telly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's got an orange Strat as well now.
Oh, he had. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. So he was using white. Well, it's originally I think a black Mexican standard telly with two kind of Rails pickups in there. I think they were Seymour Duncan. One of them might have been DiMarzio, but that's sprayed.
And I think it's a Strat neck.
It is. It's like a 70s style Strat neck, like big headstock. Like the finish on the back is kind of completely gone.
Yeah.
And he was explaining today, like, basically, if you're a left-handed player, you don't really have any choice. So his favourite guitars are ones that he's kind of put together from bits.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of the white spray paint on the back is now gone and it's just back to the black telly, and he's kind of like, most of it's ended up on my jeans, to be honest.
He's lovely.
He's a cool dude. Yeah, really cool. Actually drove up to Nottingham and back with him, so I think we're going to try and get him on the podcast at some point.
Awesome.
And yeah, overall, really, really cool session. Like the guys there, the audience and the kids at the college were like, just really interested, and it's really cool to see. I think it was 300 people.
All
totally silent while people were playing and talking. And also a really mixed audience as well. Like probably 50-50 guys and girls.
Wicked.
Silent
as in asleep whilst this
happened. No. They were really engaged with it. And like afterwards, loads of people lined up for signings and things like that. So yeah, it was cool. And I think the session is going to go up somewhere. You'll see me presenting and you'll see the guys talking about stuff. I'll put that in the Facebook group. Somewhere.
Cool.
It's gonna be good. Should we do some news?
Nudes.
Yes. Good. So first up, Fuzz Rocious pedals have announced two new pedals: the Anomalies Delay and the Feed Me EQ. Matt Knight, have you got some details?
Yes, Fuzz Rocious, the awesome pedal that if you pay extra, you can have their child paint it.
Oh, that's fudge.
I still think.
I thought it was cheaper.
Fudge Rocious. Everything's made out of fudge.
Yes, it is.
No, yeah, I they also it was do a cheaper. Pedal called Ram the Man Parts, which I thought is brilliant.
And they also, for NAMM, did a special edition of that called Ram the NAMM Parts.
That's a much better name.
Yeah.
It's the other way around, I thought, Matt Knight. I thought it was cheaper if you let their kid paint it or they'll paint it properly for full price.
Either way, you can have their kid paint it, which I just think is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, because the kid paint it, it doesn't even say what the controls are, which is great. But no. Like their kid's like three. You know, but it's wicked. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the other way around. You can have like some proper really cool artwork for full price or save like $30 and have their kid just go mental on it.
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah.
Which is I kind of want that, and then you can just stick a label on it later.
Yeah, of course.
But anyway, the first one, the Feed Me, is a programmable EQ/preamp with basically four tone stacks with 12 variations on each one, giving you a total of 20,736 combinations, you know. So
that's what I need for my 57-hour set. I need all that.
yeah. So basically, it's two high-pass EQs and two low-pass EQs with a volume and an overall tone. And it's just sort of designed to basically be like a really shapeable EQ. So you could stick it before drive pedals and kind of change the way that your drive pedals are going to react with the tone. You could stick it right before your amplifier to kind of change the way your amp reacts. You know, you could basically put it right at the end of your pedal board and alter the whole way your pedal board's going to sound. So great for recording as well. So if you're reamping things or you're going straight into an effects loop. And the other one, which is the delay, I thought was very cool because it's a standard delay with just basically time and repeats.
Digital?
But there's a second foot switch. I think it's analog, actually.
Sweet.
But what it does is you stand on a foot switch, and then the second one, depending on how you set a tiny trim pot inside, either quadruples the delay time or halves the delay time. So you can just have set a delay, tap on it, and then it will basically either completely slow down or completely speed up.
That sounds great. What a brilliantly useful feature.
Yeah, And then basically there's a little trim pot and you can set inside. So all the way one way does near quadruple time and all the way the other way does half time. So I'm assuming you can kind of set it sort of in the middle somewhere and it'd probably do something a bit
Do you know how much the Anomalies is retailing at?
They aren't available yet. They're only doing them in runs of 25 and their website just says coming spring 2016.
Oh, but man. That sounds like a pedal to own.
I reckon they'll be... Well, the Feed Me is $155. Oh, actually, their website's saying, although no dealers have got it yet, they're saying $155, which I thought was... That seems pretty cheap, really.
That's great for something that
actually,
does that.
All their pedals are, like, apart from one, are all under 200 quid.
Amazing.
Nice. One last bit of news this week. Bare Knuckle have announced a brand new pickup, the Impulse Humbucker. Matt, have you a chance to have a look on the spec?
Yeah, it looks like a toaster.
Yeah, I saw that. It looks exactly like a toaster.
I was like, I mean, if you're going to design a pickup, I mean, you probably would want it to look a bit like a toaster. From a metalcore band that I'm really sorry I've not heard of called North Lane, but specifically designed for people who use sort of really thick string gauges and like really high gain basically. And the problem is when you're using really low and really down tuned strings, if the pickups are too higher output, you don't get enough clarity. So they're actually relatively low output, or lower than what you'd expect for, you know, maybe the style of music that, you know, the guy is in, but specifically tuned so you get a lot more mid-range. So with too much treble, obviously you lose all the bass definition. With too much low end, you basically everything sounds really mushy. So there's loads of mid-range, which basically helps the guitar come through. So if you're kind of a 7, 8, 9 string player, you'd be better off with a set like this, because that's the nice thing about Bare Knuckles is they'll basically make any style of pickup they make in any configuration. Like I had someone the other day order some of the Strat pickups they do, but for an 8-string, which I was like, wow, that is mental.
That like is mental.
8-string Strat pickups. But yeah, they're basically like, well, you know, if we don't list it, if you just tell us and we'll just, if we make that pickup already, you know, they make a humbucker that you like, but you need it in a 9-string, they'll just be like, yeah, we'll do it.
Bare Knuckle, that's always pretty, to the rescue.
On the note of pickups, today I discovered something quite interesting with the Sustainiac pickup that's in some Schecter guitars. Do you know the concept of the Sustainiac?
Yeah, of course. So, it's like a reverse Ebo, basically.
Exactly so. Yeah. So we tried turning all the volume off on the guitar, so it was just acoustic, but it's plugged in.
Yeah.
Then picked a harmonic on one string, even with the volume off, and you can activate the Sustainiac. So you can hear that harmonic ringing and starting to fade out. Turn on the Sustainiac element of the pickup, and it immediately comes back like an Ebo, even unplugged. And just,
well, not unplugged, it has to be plugged in.
Oh, yeah, sorry, even with the volume turned down. Like, it's just, it lasts forever.
Yeah,
because it's the most bonkers. I mean, you describing it as a reverse Ebo actually makes that sound way less impressive than I thought of it, because I wasn't thinking of it as a reverse Ebo.
Yeah, you think it's
kind
of...
thinking of this mental pickup that just vibrated strings forever.
You think of it as an effect that's happening in the guitar, but it's actually not. It's a physical thing. It's moving the string. So
It's just a really strong magnet, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, they haven't updated their website since about 1993, and it is the worst looking thing I've ever seen.
I need to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically like Space Jam.
Matt, put that in the Facebook group when you get a minute.
I will do. Also, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I've come across this company called Pedal Genie that are a bit like Love Film. Where you could like basically obviously order DVDs, but you can order pedals on a subscription and then they just send them to you and then you just keep them for as long as you want and then they send them back and then they just send you the next one you want.
That's weird. Let's investigate that.
How weird is that?
Is it only available in the US or is it available here?
It's only available in the US at the moment.
Right. Okay.
But that is mental. You basically just like, they've got like 300-400 pedals to choose from.
Wow.
Like, everything, like, way, like as much as you'd expect from like one of the biggest like pro guitar shop or something in America, where they've got loads of different stuff. And you basically go, yeah, I want that, I want that, I want that. And depending on what your subscription level is, you can have one, two, or three at a time. And then when you're bored of it, you just send it back and they send the next one on the list.
Let's investigate that. We'll talk about it next week because we're up at time. We're going to go and do a Patreon episode where we're going to answer some of your Facebook questions. If you want to get that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. And from $10 a month, you get your name read out on the podcast as one of our executive Patreon backers. Thusly...
Jake Cross, can we do it one each?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
so it'll be like a call and repeat. So I'll go first and okay. You go second. So I've got the first one, you've got the second one.
Okay.
And so forth. Andy McNobsey.
Joe Depto.
Eric Nobry.
Paul Corrigan.
Jack Nobry.
Dale Rasko.
Jack Nogroy.
Will Clare.
Chris Nobson.
Scott O'Brien.
Matt Nobine.
Fletch Fletcher.
Phil Nobset.
Laurie Anstis.
Moog Nobbit.
Colin Anderson.
Well done.
There we go. No one feels left out, hopefully. That's everyone has been nobberized.
Totally caught me off guard.
And with that, I think we should call it a night. If you want to head over to the Facebook group to submit your questions, facebook.com/guitar nerds forum. Follow us on Twitter @guitar nerds, on Instagram @guitar nerds, and also on Periscope actually @guitar nerds. We just got delivered today a sound card that we can use with a phone, so we're probably going to be doing some full demos with a real nice sound. A real nice sound, properly mic'd up and everything, properly, you know, not just using the phone mic, over at Periscope, so @guitar nerds on Periscope. You can follow us individually, me @mark_random, Matt Knight @Matt_Knightsy, Jay @JAYBM1, and Joe @Joseph_900. Thanks very much, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Ta-da. Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.